Four, please. Now go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Four Please, Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith. We'll be recording all week long on property here at Augusta National Golf Club, discussing the Masters Tournament with some of your favorite celebrities, athletes, and entertainers. This is Thursday, April 11th. On today's episode, we'll chat with ESPN's Scott Van Pelt about why this is his favorite week of the year, and what it was like back in 1997 to watch his friend, Tiger Woods, win the Masters in historic fashion. We'll also have a conversation with global fashion icon Tory Burch about her newfound passion for golf and the new fashion line that resulted from that passion. So without delay, let's turn off of Washington Road, proceed down the famed Magnolia Lane, and get to it. First on today's docket, tournament play. The Masters is underway. Among the key storylines from Thursday's opening round, Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau lead the Masters following 6-under par 66s. But the story Thursday is Tiger Woods, with his best opening round at the Masters since 2013. ESPN's Tom Rinaldi caught up with Tiger immediately after his round.
Alongside Tiger Woods, you sometimes talk about the difference between how you play and how you score. How would you assess that after this round?
I thought I played well today. You know, I thought I hit a lot of good shots, and if I missed it, I missed it in correct spots, which was always key, and I had some of the simpler up and downs because of that.
How would you assess some of the putting inside 10 feet, in particular, on the first nine?
Well, I missed a few, for sure. Misread a couple of them and then hit one bad one there at, six? But other than that, it was a good solid day. I've shot 70 in the last four times I've won the green jacket, and it's off to a good start.
And now to help us break down Thursday's opening round, I'm pleased to welcome Jimmy Roberts to the Four Please, Now Driving podcast. Thank you so much for your time and insight, sir. Let's start with Tiger. How would you describe his performance Thursday?
You know, it's funny. I was listening to Curtis Strange on the broadcast during the day, and he said, Scott Van Pelt asked him to assess Tiger. He says, right now, Tiger is the show. And Tiger's always the show, you know, no matter what he does. I don't know, if you're looking for omens, the fact that he shot 70 today, he shot 70 in the first round, three of the four times he's won this thing.
You a numbers guy?
No, not at all. You know me, I'm a stories guy. I'm
me
a stories
too, brother.
Guy. But you know what?
Me too.
There's something about him, you know, everything he does. You know, people just can't seem to get enough of him. He's the biggest story, even when he's not got the lowest score. I think he played really, really well. He got a little bit lucky. He birdied two of the holes where he missed the fairway, and he missed badly. But he looked decent. He missed some short putts, shot 70, as I said. You know, he's proven that no matter what anybody else shoots, he's certainly in the game and around here. I think he looked pretty good today outside of missing, you know, a couple. He said he only had one bad putt. He had a couple of misreads. I think it's going to be an awful lot of fun to watch on Friday and see what he does.
Jimmy, it was remarkable to follow him. I followed him 16, 17, 18, all the way in there.
You could see?
And it was – well, we were 17 or 18 rows deep. We were kind of trying to peek through the peek through the corridors there. But we were standing actually right by the 18th fairway after he teed off and he was walking up the fairway. And he had bogeyed 17. And he looked utterly disgusted with himself, absolutely disgusted with himself. How confident were you, or what percentage chance would you have given him just a couple of years ago to even be in an opportunity like this, to be disgusted with a 2-under 70 in the first round of the Masters?
You know, I think he's obviously come a really, really long way. I mean, look, he had his back fused. I mean, that's a crazy thing for a golfer. I mean, it's all about mobility and rotation. You know, he had his back fused. I don't know how I can say it any more dramatically than that. I think where he's come from and where he is right now is really pretty remarkable. I was at Eastlake last year when he won you know, that tournament. And I'll tell you what, it was one of those things that you had to see with your own eyes. I came out of the booth and I walked onto the fairway and I recorded it on my cell phone because I could not believe what I was seeing. I mean, people are totally fascinated with this guy. I think that he's such a compelling figure and he was so dominant at one point that, you know, he made people think, first of all, he made people watch him because they couldn't look away. And once they started watching, they thought, oh, this is normal, right? Right. You know, you're supposed to win a couple of majors a year, you know, 6, 8, 10 times in a year. No, that's not normal. The year that Tiger Woods turned pro, 1996, the man who won the PGA Tour Player of the Year award was Tom Lehman. He won twice that year. You know, so that was normal for the best in the world, for guys to win like that. Now, throughout time, people like Johnny Miller, you know, and certainly Byron Nelson and folks have had their runs and won well, but he did it through a sustained period of time, and he got people to think, okay, so this is the way things are, right? It's not.
He really did set a completely irrational set of expectations for the new golf fan who joined the game's passion based on Tiger Woods. It's so interesting. So Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka get in the clubhouse with a 6-under 66. How would you gauge, first, let's talk Brooks, his performance today? He's been stellar in majors of late.
Yeah, I think the, you know, the story on Brooks is the fact that he just quietly goes about his business. And, you know, he's now, what, he won half the major championships last year, didn't play in the Masters because he had surgery on his wrist. You know, and now here he is at the top of the leaderboard in another one. And, you know, I just heard Scott Van Pelt say it on the broadcast a moment ago. You know, the last, or maybe it was Jim Nance, pardon me, the last time that we came to a position where a fellow was going to have an opportunity to win three consecutive U.S. Opens was Curtis Strange back in 1990. That's a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
And that's exactly what sits in front of Brooks Koepka right now when he goes to Pebble Beach in June. He's, you know, remarkable right now by accomplishment. I think that the paradox is that, you know, the guy could walk down Main Street and nobody would know who he is.
Right.
And I think that angers him. I know it angers him and annoys him. But on the other hand, I think it is to a certain degree by his own making because he has shied away from attention. And I think he's just that type of guy. But, you know, by performance, it's extraordinary. I
mean, he's nails.
Extraordinary.
He seems completely unflappable. He seems like he has that type of attitude and steely nerve that there is no stage too large for Koepka at this point. DeChambeau nearly holes out 18, and he also goes home Thursday evening with a 66. How would you gauge his performance?
It was what a crazy finish from him. You know, I was surprised in the morning that the scoring wasn't better. You know, and the top of the leaderboard was 3 under par. And it just seemed that there wasn't much wind, and you just couldn't figure, you know, why the scoring wasn't better. Then, boom, all of a sudden in the afternoon, DeChambeau shoots 66. Koepka shoots 66. Dustin Johnson shoots 68. Phil Mickelson, my goodness, shoots 67. You know, on and on. So, and this after the wind had picked up, and I guess, you know, what a number of the players were saying, Adam Scott said it when he came in, talked to Tom Rinaldi, and said that the hole locations were pretty difficult today, and there were a number of them out there that the guys hadn't seen before. And that really makes a difference because you putt by memory here, you putt by experience. But what DeChambeau did to close, I mean, almost a hole in one on 16,
mm-hmm.
you know, pitches in, chips in on 17, and then hits the stick on 18.
Nailed it.
Shoots 66. So it was really an exciting afternoon. And for me, I think, you know, one of the best stories is this Corey Connors.
Absolutely.
So Corey Connors shoots, what, he shoots 70. He's 2 under par. You know, this is the guy who, for those who are listening don't know, a week ago, he gets the last spot in the Masters. But not only does he win the Texas Open to get in here, he had to qualify on Monday just to get into the field at the Texas Open.
It's remarkable.
That's just, you know, there are a handful of times, I think the number is 4 or 5, that people have Monday qualified and won a tournament.
Big day coming on Friday.
Yeah.
What should we expect on Friday?
I don't know. You know, there's just something about this, you know, about this tournament, and there's really no way to wear it out. I think that you want to see what those who struggled can do to maybe right the ship. You want to see if those who had, you know, they say it, the toughest thing in golf is to follow a great round with, at the very least, a good round. So you want to see what those guys at the top of the leaderboard can do. I was surprised that Justin Rose and Jordan Spieth struggled to the degree that they did. I know Spieth has not been playing well this year, but his record here is obscene.
It is.
You know, he's never finished lower than 11th. He's won. He's finished runner-up. I think he's finished third twice. It's really crazy what happens to the guy when he gets here, but he struggled today. That surprised me. I want to see what Rory McIlroy does tomorrow. He's a fascinating study, human study. I mean, he talked his press conference the other day talking about what he's done to try and deal with the mental side of the game. It was fascinating. And I think that he was the betting favorite here, although I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. he was the betting favorite. And, of course, he just needs a Masters win to complete the career Grand Slam. But, you know, a little bit of a struggle for him today. Just two pars on the backside. Unfortunately, the rest of those holes, bogeys outnumbered birdies. He had four bogeys on the back. So he's got to be kicking himself. I'd be very curious to see what he does tomorrow.
He truly did set himself up with this tournament in mind. And his continual talk about working to find perspective and balance in his life by separating his professional passion and his personal life and making sure that his results do not define him as a man, and making sure that he maintains his own personal expectation levels. He actually said, when was it? At Austin. He said at the match play in Austin that many of us gave him tremendous credit. Oh, Rory's back. Oh, Rory's set up to be a Masters champion now because he won the Players' Championship. That is not what he thinks. He says that wasn't my best tournament of the year. Right. Mexico was my best tournament of the year. So my personal expectations and definitions and that which you guys have are not one and the same. And he won't be defined by that. So he is on this very unique journey, introspective journey, for a broader scope and a broader perspective on what he's doing. But, and then there's the green jacket part of this. He told me 2 years ago, I need a green jacket to be fulfilled as a man. Forget a golfer. I got to have that jacket in my closet to feel fulfilled as a man.
Well, I think that might have something to do with what happened when he had one arm in that green jacket.
Well, very possibly.
Yeah.
Very possibly. And it seems, and he actually is saying this, he said this to me just a couple of weeks ago, that he doesn't, certainly he wants it, of course. That's the dream for everybody. But he doesn't need it in order for his life to be fulfilled. So he is making a transition. He has grown, as we all do. But he definitely wants to shoot better than one over.
Yeah, it was, I don't think today, I think today had to be enormously disappointing to him as a golfer. But, you know, I still think he's, right now, he's one of the more fascinating people in the game because he's not just a golfer. You know, I mean, listening to his press conference the other day, one of the reporters, Doug Ferguson from the Associated Press, asked him, you know, what's the last book you read? And he rattled off four books that he had been reading and then later added a fifth that he had forgotten that he was also reading. Now, I'm not suggesting that the rest of the PGA Tour is illiterate, but, you know, normally the books that people are reading don't come up in the press room since Paul Guidos left the PGA Tour, you know, and it's just a different take. And he talks about how, you know, he's been juggling and meditating, you know, and he has a good sense of humor about himself. And he says, it's not like I'm going to go, you know, go off and live with the monks in Nepal. But he just recognizes that, you know, he's got work to do if he wants to be fulfilled as a man. And to a certain degree, that's tied to what he does for a living. I think he's a really interesting guy.
I do, too. He fascinates me. And I think he's an extremely kind, thoughtful person.
Yep.
Hopefully, he'll have a better Friday. Jimmy, thank you so much for your time and insight. It's appreciated greatly.
Marty, good to be with you. Look forward to tomorrow.
it's always so wonderful for me as a fan, and I'm sure so many of you listening can relate, to get the perspective of folks like Jimmy Roberts, who have such tremendous knowledge of the Masters Tournament. And he's not the only one. My ESPN colleague Scott Van Pelt has been covering the Masters since 1997, and I had the great opportunity to get Scott's perspective on the tournament. Here's our conversation with my ESPN colleague, Scott Van Pelt. Now joining the Four Please Now Driving official Masters podcast, my man, Scott Van Pelt. What's up?
Life is really good.
This is really good.
My favorite week of the year. It's just, as you know, it's special, hard to quantify it, hard to explain it to folks. It's like I've been saying this week, someone says, what's Augusta National like? I say, how do you describe like what chocolate ice cream tastes like? It's really, really good, but if I try to tell it to you, it'll never be as good as if you have a bite of it. So if you're out there and you've never been, just come take a bite of Augusta National. You will not regret it.
It's so remarkable. There truly is no other place like it. And not only the aesthetics. The aesthetics obviously are stunning. Everything is first class. Everything is immaculate and pristine. But it's also the atmosphere. How would you describe that atmosphere?
It's golf church, and here's what I mean by that. I don't like sports as a metaphor for church and religion. You and I are guys of faith. I wouldn't be flippant about things like that, okay? But here's what I mean. Whether you're a true believer or whether you go to church just because your grandmama made you go, when you go to church, you act right. You I don't care if it's a suit, but what do you got in the closet? What's the best stuff you got? You put it on, you go, and you act right. Well, when you come here, whether you're a low handicapper, high handicapper, not even the biggest golf fan, when you come here, you act right. There's an overall demeanor in the patrons that's. It's just good behavior encourages other good behavior. There's not a whole lot of people hooting and hollering, yelling you to man and mashed potatoes and things like that. It's just not done here. And the reason is because it's not done is because one guy doesn't do it. Because if the guy does it, everybody just gives him a side eye look. And then the Pinkerton folks will say, we hope you've enjoyed your trip to Augusta National and we'd like to show you gate 6. So everybody knows how he or she's meant to behave. And it's not that there's Big Brother. It's not Orwellian. People aren't policing you like in uniform. The patrons police one another. There's just a way people behave. And I think it has to do, Marty, with being grateful to be here. Mm-hmm. And if you're lucky enough to come every year, and I haven't come every year, but I've come for quite a few, you're just happy to be back. And if you're coming for the first time, it's so overwhelming that I just think you're in awe of the place. So, I mean, like, I am not an over-the-top, flowery language, you know, oversell, under-deliver guy. I am not. This is the one place where I will allow myself to be as much hyperbole as I can give you, and I'm still underselling it. I promise you.
I feel like I'm a broken record. I have said this with every guest. No matter how hard you try to paint the picture of Augusta National and how grand you make it, it will exceed the expectation, no matter how lofty that expectation is of the first-timer.
I agree. I was on with Waddle and Sylvie, our friends in Chicago, on ESPN Radio, and I was doing what I just did with you, get long-winded about this, that, and the other. And when I got done, Waddle said, yeah, I went last year. It was a bucket list thing. I said, am I overselling it? And he said, if anything, you're underselling.
Right.
I said, okay, there you go, right? It's if you're a sports fan and you like college basketball, you got to go to Cameron, you got to go to Fog Allen, and they're great. But ultimately, it's a basketball court the same as any basketball court. If you like baseball, you go to Wrigley or Fenway. If you like college football, you want to go to Norman or Baton Rouge or Tuscaloosa or pick a spot, Ann Arbor, Columbus. This is not SEC specific.
Just Blacksburg.
Say, there you go, Blacksburg. Although they keep losing on those big games here. I don't understand why. Anyway, go to those places, but ultimately, they're football stadiums or they're basketball stadiums. There's only one of these, and this is the one. And until you see it, until you walk around in it, it's impossible to understand it. And that's why people like me, who've been coming for many years, people like you who are making return trips here, I think that we carry with us this enthusiasm for it that is so genuine, and it's so easy to have.
1997.
Mm-hmm.
There's a young man with a full head of hair.
Sort of.
Makes his way to Augusta National and watches another young man whom he's known.
With a full head of hair.
With a full head of hair. That's right. Dominate the Masters Tournament. What was 1997 like from your perspective as someone who already knew Tiger very well at that time to see him have that transcendent moment?
It was astounding because, and keep in mind, that was my first time here. So I'm overwhelmed to begin with. And then we see, you know, the youngest, the lowest, the largest margin, the fact that, you know, given his ethnicity, I mean, there was cultural significance, there was sporting significance. And I've told this story over the years of my recollection of Tiger on a golf cart being taken down to come see the media. And as he's just starting to wheel off, I just look at him and I said, this is after he just destroyed Colin Montgomery and he's up 100 going into Sunday. And I just said, what the hell are you doing? And he just looked at me and smiled and like gave you that Tiger shrug. He said, Scotty, I don't know. And you know what the cool thing is? He didn't. And I mean, he didn't recognize, because how could he in that moment what this was going to represent? It was the beginning of an era in this sport, which, because the sport allows you to play for years into your 40s, continues now. Different, obviously. But it was, with the benefit of time, to be able to look back with more than 20 years and recognize that this was the cannonball in the deep end, and what would the waves be that reached the shore, and it was as I say, astounding. And looking back at it now and recognizing that we've seen, there's history every year here, but nothing like that has happened since, but nothing like that had happened before. So it was that line on the wall, right? The 100-year flood where you put the line on the wall and people look up and go, the water never got that high. Yeah, it did. I was here. I saw it. It was something.
You were here in 05.
I was.
And I imagine as a young man, you watched Jack in 1986.
Mm-hmm. I did, with my dad.
Those are indelible moments of the Masters Tournament. What is the moment for Scott Van Pelt? It might even be 97.
Yeah. That's great. I'll tell you the moment that I have that others wouldn't. My Masters memory is that I got to caddy in the par 3 tournament for David Duvall.
No, you did. I didn't know that.
I caddied for David Duvall, and we played with Davis Love III and Freddie Couples, and Davis's boy Drew, who at the time was an itty bitty guy. We caddy races. So we ran down the seventh fairway. Well, Drew, I don't know how old he is, maybe four, five, six, something. He's carrying a bunch of clubs. He's wearing caddy whites, and he gets a little bit wobbly, and he stumbles and falls, clubs in the air. And I have a three-picture sequence of the beginning, the middle, and the fall of him hitting the deck. And a couple years ago, I took a picture of the picture and I sent it to Davis Love and I said, send this to Drew. He now has a baby of his own.
Wow.
And it was just cool because Davis is like, oh my goodness. Like that day, and nobody played great, but the joke with David, of course, was if he was playing any good, we'd hit it in the water on 9 because you can't let him win, blah, blah, blah. But I got to experience something inside the ropes, Marty, that so few get to. And it was with David, who I want to say might have been number one in the world at the time. Davis Love III and Freddie, three great gentlemen. And I mean, you talk about a day, boy. There's been a lot of rounds and a lot of memories here. But that afternoon wearing the caddy whites with David, that'll never leave me.
You talking about watching 86 with your father.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing about the Masters that is so endearing to me. It's one of those generational events.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what little Scotty would have said. But look, man, the fact of the matter is, you won't say this about yourself, so I will say it. You are one of the faces. You are one of the voices. You are one of the institution personalities of this institution.
That's kind of you.
It's just the truth. What would that little 10- or 12-year-old guy have said about sitting right here, right now, in that type of position?
Well, I mean, you never would have believed it. Of course, when I was little, I was sure that I was going to be the one everybody was talking about, right? I was going to be the guy in the arena.
Yeah.
Then the reality set in when I realized I was good but not great. But you and I both know what it is to try to make our dads proud, right? We do that. We wake up every day. I'm older now than my dad ever got to be, and I'm still in the business of trying to make dad proud. And I know it would. I know how thrilled he'd be for me. But you can't live your life just for your dad. I try to live it for me. I try to live it for my family. And I'm just so grateful, man. There's places around here that it's real easy to stop and take a look around. And I do. And the first thing I did on Monday is I went to that tee, the eighth tee on the par three course, and I just say a little prayer. I just thank the Lord for the year. I'm thankful that I'm standing where I'm standing. I appreciate that this is where I'm standing. Little me would have never believed it's possible that I could come here and get to do this. So old me tries to stay always grateful and recognize that this is truly a blessing. Every day is. Days here are particularly magnified blessings. And so I'm just grateful, man. That's it.
You're so close with so many of these guys mm-hmm. who have put the green jacket on their back. How does that change a golfer's life? What impact does that have, not only as a professional, but as a human being when they accomplish the ultimate peak in golf?
I think this place, more than any other, every major is significant, right? You win a major, and then it's proof that I can survive those 72 holes against the best in the world when the stakes are the highest and the lights are the brightest. All good. U.S. Open, great. Open Championship, oldest one we played. PGA, also great. Underrated. By the way, coming to ESPN next year. The Masters is singular in this way. As great as all the stuff that you and I are talking about, me going over to the eighth tee and the memories and the fact that we get to come back, as great as all that is, how does it change your life? You know that for the rest of your life, in the spring, you will go to Augusta and you will have a green jacket that will have your name in it and on it because you earned it and you won it. And you and your family get to come back to this place and renew acquaintances with friendships, with friends, renew friendships, I should say. Spend some time out looking at the azalea. Spend the time in the company of these people that whose company you've earned the right to keep. That's how it changes you. You know. You don't have to hope you get to drive down Magnolia Lane every spring. You know that you get to do it, and you get to park in that Champions parking lot, which is little. And that's a perk, man. And it's not none of it's taken lightly, because everyone understands that it's earned, and everyone understands that little invitation you get in the mail. Everybody talks about it. The letterhead. How do I put it? The weight
the
of
embossing.
Well, just the weight of the stationery. I mean, there's a thickness to it, right? And it's you know it. I bet you could close these guys' eyes and put that in their hand. They're like, oh, this is the invite from the Masters, isn't it? It sure is. Knowing one's coming for you every spring, and that you get to come back. Nothing else like it in this sport. That's why the green jacket represents so much to these guys, because it's a rest of your life thing.
Well, I feel so blessed to even get to be on these grounds, and thank you so much for your time and insight, and I love fellowshipping with you, brother. You're a first-class person.
Yeah, right on. You are my guy, and you know that, and it's great to have you along for the ride.
My favorite part of that conversation with Scott is how proud his father would be of him. He and I have always had a tremendous bond as friends, not just colleagues, but as friends, as men who grew up idolizing their fathers and gained their appreciation for sport from their father's passion for sport. We both grew up watching the Masters Tournament with our dads, and I just love to hear what he had to say about that. And his story about the par three was pretty good too. I know you guys enjoyed that. But I also know that many of the ladies listening to the Four Please Now Driving official Masters podcast could not wait for my next conversation with global fashion icon Tori Burch, who is new to the game of golf. In fact, she's just about to take up playing it. This is her first trip to the Masters, and it's always so wonderful to hear people's perspective on the first time they come to Augusta National Golf Club. Her passion for golf is growing, and it, in fact, spawned a brand new fashion line. You'll learn about all of that in this conversation with Tori Burch. I'm absolutely thrilled now to introduce Tori Burch, of course, globally recognized fashion designer. You like that introduction?
I don't know. I'll take that. Thank you very much.
I will tell you this. I've had the great blessing in my life to interview so many different types of people of great acclaim. My wife, Lainey, generally doesn't care. She and her girlfriends are losing their mind that I get to spend this time with you. So thank you for doing that. First, what are your impressions of the Masters and Augusta National.
When I walked in, you asked me how I was doing, and I could say never better, because I honestly have heard about the Masters for so long and have tried even to come. I could never imagine what the Masters really was until I was here today. It is extraordinary. It is beautiful. The energy, the people, the flowers, the architecture, the grass. I can go on and on.
Well, that is one thing about this tournament that is so special is the aesthetics.
The aesthetics.
It's just stunning to the eye. And in your profession, I imagine that's one of the most important attributes in your passion.
It's true. So
what do you see?
Well, I kept saying, I think I'm on sensory overload right now. That was sort of partly it. Certainly, I see everything beautiful because I see a group of people, a massive group of people, which is, I wasn't prepared for this big of a group, but they're all so happy to be here. And a little optimism is a great thing right now. And for me to see that surrounded by such exquisite beauty, and even new buildings look old and as if they've always been here, and looking at these giant hanging geraniums that I love, and azaleas and the wisteria, and I could go on and on. But then you look at the courses and just the sharp golfers that are out there just having the best time of their life.
So, I'm intrigued. How would you describe golf fashion?
I've always been interested. Well, first of all, I love sports. I think of myself as a sporty person. And when people say, "Are you a golfer?" I have to answer. They answer no. And that's so sad because I will be. But I'm a tennis player. But I've always been really interested in women's golf clothing. And I think it's because it started with Katharine Hepburn.
Awesome.
And I loved watching her. She's one of my favorite people ever. And she loved golf. And I always have been interested in the way golf has evolved from then until now. And so when we decided to start our sport collection about 3 years ago, golf was definitely part of it. And I was very interested in thinking, how can we have things that are super functional and something that real golfers want to play in, but also combine that with style?
I was going to ask you, you do have your new line, Tory Sport. I was going to ask you, what was the inspiration for that? It may be Mrs. Hepburn.
Well,
what are the inspirations for that?
Well, actually, it was the Royal Tenenbaums. But she
Fantastic.
I have to say that. But I think it really was just the fact that I grew up playing sports, and I love all sports. And it seemed like a natural extension for our company. And it was, we've been working on it for so long. I almost felt like, wow, all of a sudden we were on trend, because we had been working on fabrics for maybe 5 years before we even launched the sport line, because I was very interested in the idea of having fabrics that were functional, having clothes that were super functional, but didn't really read functionally. I wanted a more classic appeal. And so I wanted the properties to be a given, and the wicking and the Coolmax and the sun protection and everything there. But I also wanted it to be stylish and not necessarily about it being seen on the outside.
You noted some of those attributes that go into sport clothing versus traditional fashion. How did that challenge you?
It was a huge challenge. It was starting from scratch again. And number one, doing a startup again, I've forgotten how hard it was. So I didn't realize it would take me this long to get it off the ground, and it certainly has, but I'm so passionate about it. I've learned so much. I surrounded myself with the most incredible team who all had a sport background. So I came from more of a fashion background. I learned so much about fabrics and developing different materials and the way athletes need to feel and how they need to move in the sports that they play.
As you're preparing to go to the Masters, all of us have this certain vision of what it's going to look like. How did your vision intersect what it really looks like?
Well, I have to say my impression of the Masters changed drastically in the most positive way when ANWA happened. Mm. And not that it was ever negative, because it's always positive, but when you added an element of amateur women's golf, for me, that was transformative. I started our company because I wanted to start a foundation for women. And so to have that aspect partner with the Masters in the way that you did this year was truly meaningful. And it was something that I think is just looking forward going to be an excellent thing for everyone.
So it sounds like we're discussing the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It sounds like that inspiration in some ways was a validation for your vision for that line.
Well, I think it was also from your perspective, or actually from Augusta's perspective, why they were also interested in working with us when they were planning on doing that. But I definitely, it would have, I didn't know that much about it when I met with, when we had our first meeting. I was blown away by the people that work here and sold immediately on just Augusta, the tradition, the history, the beauty, and but that was just something so additive.
As meticulous as everything is here, it is inspiring just to be here, and there's such a wonderful spirit, which I've discussed with so many people on this podcast. How would you describe the spirit of the Masters?
I would say it's the most positive environment I've seen in a long time, and I think in a way everyone has an inner athlete in them, and even though I'm not a golfer per se, that doesn't mean I don't want to learn golf immediately coming here.
So you've been inspired.
It's been a huge inspiration. So next time we speak, hopefully I'll have a handicap.
Are we going to put down the tennis racket then?
Definitely
and
not.
Pick up the golf club? How's this going
to
work?
No, I just have to find more time.
We all need to find more time to golf. Three sons, right?
Yes.
What do they say about mom having the opportunity to go to Augusta National?
Oh, they were so beyond thrilled. Two of them are traveling, or they would have begged to have been here. They love golf. They love watching it, too.
As you progress throughout the rest of the day and your time here at Augusta National, what do you hope you kind of take away from this experience here?
Well, I hope one thing that I also was watching with Jennifer and Maria was their camaraderie, mm-hmm. and the elegance in which they celebrated that tournament as a winner and someone that did not win, and the way they handled themselves. And just it was such a lesson in humility and grace. And that's something that inspires me. But aside from that, what do I take away is that I would like to come back, because coming here is like instant positive, just reinforcement for, I don't know, the next 6 months. It's like you leave here inspired and feeling great. And I just think it's a wonderful thing.
It is. And it's so fun to there's nowhere else that I go that has that this air. And it's the respect for the grounds that permeates the patrons, and thereby you are more respectful of your peers.
Yeah.
There are none of these. So you're immersed in the moment. You're actually fellowshipping together instead of watching the world through an iPhone.
And so
it's tremendous.
I will tell you, I'm going to learn from that, because I like not having an iPhone today. It's been very rewarding and freeing. And I'm actually thinking of taking that to the office for a day. Every now and then, maybe a day every 2 weeks, no iPhones.
So
it makes you present.
It makes you present. And in this life, especially as a driven professional, the hardest thing to do is be present.
Yes.
Is not be looking ahead, is not be concerned with what's behind. It's to be immersed in the moment. And this is one of the only places that that's possible.
Hopefully the dinner table too.
My children will never have their phones at the dinner table. How do you think you'll take that to the office? Are you going to have, like, no iPhone Friday?
No, I was just thinking about it. I mean, listen, I like the idea of no iPhones. I'm scared of social media in some ways. I think that...
I'm terrified of it.
It's, you know, we all need to look at our lives where they were 10, 20 years ago and where they're going. And certainly for our children, from our children's perspective, because that's all they know. So how do we be present and take the good from what technology can offer and really sort of eradicate the bad? It's a big question, I know.
It's a huge question, and one that everyone who's a parent is grappling with.
Yes.
Often.
Yes.
Daily.
So Augusta is leading the way there.
Augusta's leading the way in many ways. And isn't it funny how taking this simple, there's so much beauty in simplicity. You know that. Look at what you do, right? There's so much beauty in that. This place is the poster for that. It's funny how reverting away from this reminds you of how wonderful it is to be present and to be together. And
well,
fellowship.
And something about Augusta that I've noticed is the nostalgia, whether it's in a print on a glass or the architecture of a building or the interior of a restaurant. And that goes back to a time that was a little simpler than today. And certainly that all ties together.
I seek nostalgia. I love how it feels. Yeah. I want to feel that often. And I can't tell you how much we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're honored to be here. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. We're doing this every night during tournament week, all the way through Sunday, when someone will put a green jacket on his back. Good night from Augusta National Golf Club.